Hi, friends! Join us as we dive into the themes, metaphors, and foreshadowing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We are your hosts, Leah,
Sarah,
Tabby,
and whether you're a new viewer or a longtime fan, welcome to Becoming Buffy.
Hi guys, welcome back to Season 5, Episode 13, Blood Ties, our spoiler section. Once again, it's just Tabby and I. Sorry for all you Leah stans out there, but we will do our best to entertain you, to awe you, to make you love the show more. And next time, we're going to have a really fun guest. So it's not just going to be the two of us anymore, which it's so weird just being the two of us.
It's like, so weird. Leah's so selective with her energy. Selective with her words when she comes in, but her energy is always here.
Yes, exactly. I know she talks not as much as like you and I do. So in that regard, it's not that different, but it's very different when she's not here.
But you know when she's here. Yeah.
Exactly. Her very passionate opinions are just funny. They crack me up. Okay, so Blood Ties. I love this episode. I love this episode so much. This is huge. Not only do we find out that Ben and Glory are basically the same person, like the two people that share the same body, Dawn finds out who she is. We have the whole gang take on Glory for the first time. We have that touching moment at the very end where Buffy and Dawn are talking about, you know, Dawn being a part of the Summers family. It just has so many amazing moments. And it makes me really excited for the end of the season. Like, this episode sets up the gift so much, but it also kind of hints at a few other things that we're gonna talk about a lot later on in season five, but also in season six. So one of those things is, like, we have the famous "get out, get out, get out" from Dawn, which we talked about how, like, this one is not so bad. The next one that she does is in Older and Far Away, which is Buffy's 21st birthday in season six, which I think they're supposed to be like a nod to each other. That one is like purely irritating, with Dawn trapping everybody inside of her, or inside of the house, for Buffy's birthday. It's like Halfrick. She calls on Halfrick vengeance demon.
Yeah, that one's a bit different. That's where I'm like, okay, Dawn. But like, up until this point, I'm a Dawn apologetist.
Dawn apostle. You're a Dawn apostle.
I'm a Dawn apostle, yes. Number one Dawn apostle here.
And I was thinking a lot about Dawn's characterization over the next few seasons.
Apologist.
What is it? Yeah.
Okay, thank
it
you.
It is apologist.
I thought it, you guys.
Did you have to look it up?
No.
No, okay.
I was just thinking about it.
I was thinking about how Dawn is one of those characters that I think would have benefited greatly from the writers putting more into her arc. I feel like after season five, she doesn't really have very much to do on the show, and she doesn't have as much intention in comparison to the other characters. They have that storyline of her being like a klepto, which they kind of hint at here, but that never really goes anywhere.
They could have done something with that, like something a little bit more like, why do you feel the need to? Because it was just like kind of like, it's seen more as like a, oh, Dawn just being
she just
a teenager.
Wants attention.
And like, yeah, like it's like, okay, let's really unpack that. Clearly she wants attention, but why?
Does she feel like she's not getting enough attention? Like, let's think about everything she's been through.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I do like that, you know, we have potential, which I always point back to. It's like the biggest Dawn episode, in my opinion. In season seven, like, you know, where she has this longing to be recognized, to be seen, as we've seen with all of her stealing up until now. And we have that beautiful moment where she realizes that Amanda is the potential, not her. And she doesn't take the limelight from Amanda, and then it ends up fading into the background. We've talked about this before. It's one of the best Xander moments, one of the best Dawn moments. And I think that is supposed to be kind of like a rounding out of Dawn's arc from being a kleptomaniac, and that she's stealing because she wants attention. She wants to feel a part of something. She's trying to find a place in the world, but she's also trying to find autonomy. And so this is her way of like seeking control. And I like that in potential, we have her recognizing that her place is a lot more muted than Buffy's role in the world, and kind of like finally being okay with that. But all that to say, I think that Dawn could have benefited from a lot more of a storyline. And I think people would like her more if they actually did that, because she ends up just kind of being there for most of the series.
I mean, when she goes through her angsty phase in 6, some storylines are expected. And expected meaning like the whole Halloween episode. I'm like, yeah, she's a teenager. She's going to do that. And it's kind of fun seeing it in like a, you go out with a literal vampire in this world rather than like a bad boy that you go and like sneak out to
Buffy,
hook up
like,
with.
Like judging her and we're all
exactly.
like Buffy.
So it's like, that's a fun dynamic. Like that, right. that I'm like, I love to see that. But it's like, I think like you're saying, if we kind of gave more of a purpose and like a more full-fledged arc with more of the angsty stuff that she does, it's a little bit more of a bigger deal, then I think it would land better. I think that they also just, other than season 5, they don't really quite know what to do with her.
No, they don't.
And in season 7, it's such like wasted potential because in the beginning, I mean, this is just an issue with season 7 in general, but first half is always really strong with Dawn. And then, like you said, they just kind of forget about her. And then she's just around the second half because we have the episode potential, which is just beautiful. And then just like nothing.
Nothing. And season 7 does that a lot because it's got Selfless for Anya. Then it has conversations with dead people that really like Buffy's going through a lot of stuff, like kind of addressing some things, which not all of it I agree with, but she's addressing some things. Mm-hmm. Then you have
We have Helpless and Selfless.
Yes, Helpless, Selfless. You have potential is a little bit later on. You have that beautiful episode with Cassie. I forget what that one's called.
Oh,
where...
not Helpless. Isn't it just Help or something like that?
Help, yes. Help,
yeah,
Selfless.
I'm thinking Helpless from season 3. There's Help and Selfless in season 7.
Yes, I knew what you meant, but yeah.
Every time – like I'll watch like a reactor get to season 7. Most of them will be kind of like forewarned that season 7 is not everyone's favorite. And it just kills me inside because they'll start the first few episodes and they're like, wow, season 7 is turning out so strong. And I'm like, this is the best, girl.
They're like, I don't know what you all are talking about. And when they wrap up so many people's arcs or they like set up for
and then it goes
the
nowhere.
Finale. It goes nowhere until you get to the finale.
But there's so much potential in the first like 8-9 episodes. You're like, oh,
there's so
much story.
Because you
really think it's going one
have.
Direction.
Yep.
And then they're like planting something that could be so interesting, and then they just either never tackle it or that it's just unresolved.
It's never
unresolved.
Talked about ever. Yeah, yeah, it's just left unresolved. Yep, totally. Yep. All right. But we'll talk about that when we get there. Well, right now we're in season 5, which thankfully has very few things that are unresolved.
Yeah, let's enjoy season 5. Because
I know, we keep
we'll be talking
about
season
6
and 7 for a long time.
Next year's going to be a little rough, guys. All right. So then we have this moment where Anya talks about how there are thousands of demon dimensions. All are different. Giles says they're all pushing at the edges of this reality, trying to find a way in. And Buffy says, I guess Glory found one. The question is why. So we find out later that Glory is actually banished here by the two other hell gods. I don't remember why, but they like, I think she was becoming too powerful or something like that. They banished her here, which doesn't make sense to me. If they're all trying to find their way into this reality, why would they banish Glory here? And also, if they saw a way to get Glory here, how did they not find a way to get in themselves? I don't know. I know I talk about this like every spoiler section, but I wish they had spent more time on the rich lore behind Glory. And I think about this even like Illyria on Angel and all of that stuff. Like they had the potential, there's that word again. They had the potential to have so many really cool storylines and lore and background and like to expand on all that, and they didn't. And I know they were trying to keep the shows a little more grounded, but I'll always be a little bit bummed that we never learned more about Glory's backstory.
Yep.
Okay, so we have IOU Pain Willow coming in a couple of episodes at the end of the season. So the Glory storyline is brilliant for so many reasons, but one that I literally have never thought about until this rewatch was that it was a huge catalyst for Willow delving even harder into magic. So in this episode, you have Willow and Tara doing that spell to teleport Glory somewhere else. And then you know how like she collapses and she has that nosebleed. And then Giles is like, wow, that's like really powerful for a rich witch of your caliber. And she's like, yeah, I won't be doing that again. I wonder if her being so weakened here and then Tara's mind being scrambled later on were some of the bigger catalysts for Willow starting to tap even more into magics and try to find more power. Because once she realized, hey, like, I'm actually not as powerful like as I need to be for Glory. And then also with how fast she burns out when going after Glory in that episode, I don't remember which one it is. I wonder if that is kind of like what started her to like start researching and stuff more. Because again, we have Forever where Willow pulls out that book to give to Dawn. And Giles like even notes her power usage over the summer between 5 and 6 when she's trying to bring Buffy back and stuff. I don't know. It's just interesting. Like all these little things that I've never put 2 and 2 together until I watched this last time. And I'm like, oh, Willow didn't just arbitrarily suddenly become super powerful and start becoming obsessed and addicted to magics. Like there were some big things that happened that probably were what spurred her on. And then, okay, talking about Tara. So I know we like talk about Tara and like the future arcs and stuff with her, but this episode, there was that moment where they're talking about how Glory like sucks the crazy out of people or like the sanity out of people, I guess, and makes them mm-hmm. crazy. And then Tara's reaction, she seems more haunted and disturbed by this than anybody else. She says, at least vampires just kill you. And then we have at the end of the season when Tara knows what Glory is capable of, what Glory is probably going to do to her, and still refuses to give up Dawn to her. And then she gets her sanity sucked out. And then the loss of autonomy that Tara repeatedly experiences in this show from her family, from Glory, and then again by Willow in season 6. People don't talk enough about how Willow was awful to Tara. And uh-huh. I respect Tara so much for leaving her, but there's a part of me that struggles a lot when Tara gets back together with Willow because I'm like, dude, I just don't think Willow is a good partner, honestly.
It's hard because I think obviously people are really complicated and the nuances of, I mean, there's a reason why people get into divorces and break up and all that sort of stuff, because it can start off one way. And then if people refuse to grow or get accountability, you can genuinely change. Change in a way that like not that you completely change as a person, but that there's always that part of you that if kept on check will take over because you're not trying to address the bad parts of yourself and are willing to grow. And I think people like Willow are an example of somebody who she kind of has a victim complex.
Yeah.
And so because of that, usually people who have that mindset are very self-preservation in a very toxic way. And so she is very unwilling to self-reflect because, I mean, we see that throughout the series. Like absolutely. Anytime she self-reflects, she's so uncomfortable with that and she shuts down and she doesn't like to be not in control. And mm-hmm. so she will just manifest that in many different ways. And so when people change and relationships start not working out, I mean, there's a reason why people break up. And a lot of the times it's not as simple as I don't love you anymore. It's like you harm me actively because you are not taking – you're not working on yourself. And therefore, you're not
accountability.
Our relationship is taking a downturn because then I'm having to work at it and make excuses and like, you know – give so much energy into relationships and there's like no reciprocation or just understanding on their end. And we saw that in the relationship and I think it's really well done because it's not like we see Willow as a villain when they break up. We just see her as like it's more just like heartbreaking because we've known her for so long. And it's not that we hate her when they break up. So it's one of those hard breakups because it's like, I don't think I've ever seen, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if I can, on the top of my head, think of a breakup where we've seen them together for so long and loved a character and we've agreed with the new character for breaking up with them. and been proud of them and been like, yeah.
No, don't like, get back together with them.
Like, that's actually crazy. Like, now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, dang. And like, in putting up boundaries the way that Tara has, not only is it just beautiful for her arc, but like, I have never seen that in such a real way in television before. Which is just, like, I mean, claps to the writers, because especially in season six, I mean, it's not going to be many times that I really do that. But like, like, I don't know. It is very difficult, because towards the end of the relationship, Willow was not. And it's so hard, because I understand that this is a huge topic with addicts in general. And it's really hard to love, actively love, and give so much when you're close to addicts, because it's just, they say and do things that are just really harmful and hard. And I've been around lots of addicts. I've loved lots of addicts, and it's a really difficult situation. And I've been around people who have had family members and friends and partners that have been addicts and struggled, and like, seeing how like hard it is for them and like how much they have to sacrifice. Like, and I really admire that. So it's really hard. And it's something that people will never know the full answer to when it comes to these situations. Like, it's a really hard topic to talk about, because like, I mean, it's a disease. Like, their whole life they live with it. Even if you're sober for 20 years, like, you're not cure of it. You're just not actively indulging in it. And I don't know. It's so hard to watch Willow go through that. But I'm also not going to sit here and like, one thing we can't all agree on is that we're not going to sit here and just like give them passes for stuff. But it's also like, what do you do in these situations? I can be aware that they're struggling and like, this is natural for them to do these things, but also be like, hey, my boundary in a relationship is for you to not be doing these things and not to be harming me and saying these things and all that sort of stuff, whatever that means to you. And if they can only give that, it's okay for you to walk away. And I think that's really, really difficult. And especially for Tara, who especially we just watched Family. So to see her a season and a half later to kind of put her foot down and be like, you have violated my mind. And actually, now that I'm saying it out loud, Tara also, they both really struggle with control, but in different ways. So Tara is very much, don't control me. I want to be able to have autonomy in every area of my life, which, girly, me too, same. Willow is more of like, I want to be in control. And there's a difference between those two. And Tara has struggled by being put in situations where she has had to be a doormat. It's not that she is. I will fight on this hill. I really relate to Tara. It's not that she is a doormat. It's that the systems that she's grown up with and the people that she's always surrounded herself with have forced her to be one, because they've gaslit her into thinking that she is less of a person if she is not adhering to what they believe
want her to
should
be.
So I'm proud of her. Like, and it's hard, because I mean, everyone who's been listening to Becoming Buffy knows how much I love Willow, how much I've related to her, especially in the earlier seasons. Like, but I think during this rewatch, I've realized when it comes to the specific type of control that Willow struggles with, I lean more towards the Tara side of it. And I think it's a different perspective between the two. It's like, control is so important to me, but it's more of like, I want to be able to have autonomy and have that control as a human being, rather than like freaking out if I don't have like control in general. And even to the point where Willow controls people around her, like, that's not okay. Yeah, that was very long-winded.
No, it's okay.
But their relationship is very complex. And to like kind of answer what you're saying, or not even answer, but like, I think that she wasn't good for her towards the end of their relationship. And I'm glad that they were apart for most of season six. It sucks they got together and the episode later she dies. But like,
yeah,
it just makes it look, you just look back and you're like, dang, like all the work that Willow went through to like be clean on her own, like she really deserved that. And they just did deserve to be back together. So just that's what makes it even more heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not that she was going on a spiral and then Tara dies in front of her. It's like, no, she was clean mm-hmm. on her own. And then it was Tara's decision in her control to go and get back together.
Yeah, with knowing Willow. That she was going to be with someone who's a recovering yes. addict. Yeah.
But she had seen her work really hard on herself outside of, I mean, yeah, obviously she wanted to get back together with Tara, but like in the beginning it was just for Tara. But like later she was like resigned to the fact they wouldn't get together.
Willow wanted to be clean too. Besides that, like there's that moment but where she has that car accident with Will with Dawn, and she's like sobbing at Buffy's feet, like, help me. Willow knew, and Willow wanted to be better and to be clean. But I think that the whole thing with Tara was just kind of a catalyst. It was a wake up call, which as it should have been. Mm-hmm. But and I'm gonna say this probably up until Tara's death, like Tara is a hugely underrated character in this fandom, and
more than her just being nice, because that's what everyone always says.
She's like strong. She's one of the strongest characters of the show, and I will not, stand on that.
And in a way that is just so, like, I don't know if the term understated is the correct
it's
one.
It's totally
but just,
understated.
Like it's a strength that she doesn't feel the need to exude, but she stands her ground in such a sweet, classy way, mm-hmm. and I feel like. That's just, I love that. I love that about her.
And I really like the parallels that they continue with between Tara and Dawn, just being outsiders. And you even see that in this episode, like Tara talking about how, oh my gosh, it's so hard when you have someone that violates your mind or you don't know who you are and stuff like that. And that's what Dawn is struggling with this in this episode. And I love that friendship that continues, like even once like Willow and Tara are broken up, Tara still makes the effort to hang out with Dawn and like has lunches with her and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's very, very sweet. Okay. So one of the other things that, I mean, we talked about this in the spoiler-free section, and this was one of my favorite things that I discovered in this rewatch and shared with you all last time, is the whole thing with the Crusades, the Knights people, and how that's the whole idea of like the religious element of this episode and how it's supposed to be kind of like the antithesis of feminism. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how, like, we've talked about ad nauseum that this episode or this season is all about kind of like lost girlhood as a theme, mm-hmm. represented through Dawn, and how the Watchers take a young girl and make her a slayer, stealing her childhood and forcing her to grow up, similar to the Knight's desire to sever the link And we have the death is your gift thing that comes up later on. And we have that moment where Glory is talking to Dawn, and Dawn says, am I evil? And Glory says, totally. Well, no, not really. I guess it depends on your point of view. And I talked about how like that's also like the Knight's view of Dawn. They view Dawn as an evil. But then you have obviously the monks who believed she was precious and worth saving. And so we have death is your gift. That is so interesting to me too, because that is also kind of dependent upon the point of view of whoever it is that is viewing the Slayer powers in particular. Some people would probably view Buffy's Slayer powers as a curse, not a gift. I would imagine Buffy would see it as a curse. But you see, you know, the Watchers, they were like, oh, this is a gift, but it's also a gift to be exploited by us. And so it's kind of like means different things to different people. And how her gifts or her slaying is a gift to the innocents that she is saving in slaying these vampires. And then she's also a curse to the vampires as she saves the helpless. And I love that there's that parallel between Buffy and Dawn. And how that's going to continue on through this season. Like, and again, that's the whole point of duality, right? There's the two sides of it. A slayer is, it's a gift, but it's also a curse too in some ways, but it just depends upon who it is. And then kind of going in with that whole like lost girlhood theme, we talked about this in the spoiler-free episode, but the part where Tara and Willow give Buffy like that pretty dress, and they're like, you know, you're going to get lots of crossbows and other Killy stuff. We thought you should get something girly and pretty. And we talked about how all the episodes are like, or the, all of the outfits were really killing it this episode, and like how it's supposed to be like an intentional thing to show like the two sides. But we've talked about this before, but Buffy's style and her hair diminishes as the season goes on. Like, look at her, how she's dressed in this episode. She's got like these beautiful clothes on, very girly. She's got like the cute details of like the scarf and then the big hoop earrings, and her hair is beautiful and luscious and stuff. And then think about by the time we get to like Intervention and we start getting to The Weight of the World and stuff, her hair is pulled back in just a ponytail. She's wearing just all dark clothes. Buffy is losing, it feels like she loses an aspect of herself as the season goes on, just because of how weighed down she is, and just with everything that's going on in her life. And it shows the loss of her girlhood and her innocence. And obviously she doesn't lose it completely because John doesn't die. But I just love the subtle foreshadowing there and how like it kind of just tells the story as we go on in the season. And then the last thing, I talked about this a ton in the regular episode, but the subtle foreshadowing where Buffy grabs her blood, presses it into Dawn's and says, "The monks made you out of me." Like, it's Summer's blood. She didn't say they made you out of me yet, but she's like, "It's Summer's blood, just like mine." And the foreshadowing and how this all ties together so well with Buffy being able to die for Dawn, because Dawn was literally made out of her. Like,
and in a way that you never really think about until.
No, right? The gift. How do we not see this? Yeah. And then it all comes together and you're just like, oh my gosh, it's so well done.
Well, I mean, you could also take that moment as like, not as literal as it actually is, because that's not how I really took it until the gift. I was like, oh, it's literally Buffy's blood, like it's made out of her, you know? Like when the monk or whatever was like, oh, we made human, sent it to you.
Gave it flesh, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking like literally out of Buffy.
Yeah.
And then even when they like are like, oh, it's Summer's blood, it's more of like a, you are my sister, regardless of you not technically being my sister. So you could see it as either one of those things. It's like literal or like a metaphorical thing. And tell the gift and you're like, oh.
Of course.
She was being literal. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The metaphor the entire season is now become literal. Like, oh, Dawn is actually made out of Buffy. So all those parallels weren't just, you know, the show being like, oh, look at little Buffy Jr. Like, she's her little sister. No, it's like actual Buffy Jr.
Yep.
And also it's just so clever too, because like blood is used symbolically on the show as a representation of identity. So identity is formed through autonomy and choice, making active choices in your life. And that's something that vampires are incapable of. So the idea of like vampires drinking blood as a way to feel alive is them effectively stealing someone's identity because they don't have their own, which is kind of like a really cool parallel. And so Buffy mixing hers and Dawn's blood is such a metaphor of, I see you in me, but you also have purpose and you also have identity on your own. Like, I see you as your own person. And Mark Field talks about how this episode reveals that Ben and Glory, like them morphing into each other, but they're also two separate and distinct personalities. And we've talked a lot about like the duality of everything and how in The Replacement, we learned that you need all aspects of your personality in order to be your full and complete self. Like, Buffy has to have the human side as well as the Slayer side in order to be a fully formed individual. Xander needs both sides of himself. And so knowing that Dawn is the other side of Buffy and Gloria is also supposed to be a representative of the other side of Buffy as well, it's cool to see that and be like, okay, so Buffy needs both sides of her. It's not good for her to just, you know, lean into one and not the other. And then thinking about that in the metaphor of, or the example of Ben and Glory. Ben and Glory are two completely separate individuals at odds with one another. And I think that's such a cool contrast to Buffy. And like we have in Intervention, Buffy's afraid that in becoming a more powerful Slayer, she's losing her other side, like her ability to love. And this moment with Dawn right here, where she says, you know, it's Summer's blood, this moment with Dawn is further proof of Dawn's connection to Buffy's humanity, which is why Buffy needs her this season. Buffy needs that connection to ground her because she's afraid she's going to turn into Glory and become really hardened and stuff. And like, Intervention's really cool. I can't wait to talk about it because that's the episode where we meet the Buffy bot, which barf, but also the Buffy bot serves as this.
It is helpful.
This idea of like Buffy's turning into a mindless robot who just can go out and slay, and even her friends can't tell the difference between Buffy and the robot. And so Buffy's like, oh my gosh, am I turning into this like soulless, loveless thing that just goes out and slays? And so it serves a purpose. It's gross. But all that to say, I think that it's so beautiful how they're just tying together all these different elements and how it's just going to pay off in such a big way. So that's why it's my favorite season, guys. The season is just like so good. Everything has purpose and intention, and it just makes it so fun to watch and so fun to discuss. All right. So a bit shorter this week, but never fear. Our crush spoiler is Gulma Juicy.
Is that the next one?
That's the next episode, Crush.
Dang. Yeah.
That's going to be a fun episode. I have such
mixed feelings for Crush, though.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yes, great episode. Drusilla. Very well
Drusilla's
done.
Back. Harmony's back. It's kind of like Fool for Love part two in a lot of ways.
I think that it's one of those episodes. I'm trying to think of a correlation. an example. It's one of those. Okay. I've never seen Fight Club, but I know this about Fight Club. It's like when you watch Fight Club, it's like when a movie bro says that Fight Club is their favorite movie. And I'm like, why?
Why is that?
Did you get movie the bro? Point of Fight Club?
Yes.
Or do you just like the aesthetic of it and yeah. like it for what it's trying to make fun of? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, right. It's one of those movies. I know that about Fight Club. So like, it's like, it knows what it's doing. It's like feeding into what it's making fun of. Or just putting like, not necessarily making fun of, but like having a commentary on. And then by calling it Fight Club and like this macho man, you know, whatever.
Right.
And so it's like, I view that as like Crush. I'm like, most people don't get it. Like, if you get right. Crush, you understand that it's like, it's supposed to be, same thing with Phantom of the Opera. Love Phantom of the Opera. Those Phantom of the Opera and Crush are two sides of the same coin. It's like, and I know I've mentioned this like probably four times. I'm so sorry, guys. I can't think of any other correlation right now. But they also really play into that. Like, he has a mural of Buffy. He makes a Buffy bot. Like, right. If you've seen Phantom of the Opera, you're not supposed to like the Phantom romantically. You're supposed to see him. He literally grooms Christine. And also canonically, he's like, in his 50s, 40s, 50s, something like that. He's twice her age.
Yeah, he's old.
He's canonically at least
she's
twice
like supposed
her
to be
age.
19, I think.
She's supposed to be like, I think she, I think the original, she's supposed to be underage. I think. But she's young.
I don't know.
She's very young. And he uses the fact that she's vulnerable and gaslights her and then like, has romanticized idea of Christine that's not actually Christine, takes her to his dungeon, and she ends up like fainting because she sees like a literal mannequin of her in a wedding gown.
traumatizing.
And it's like, yes, he's an interesting character because he grew up abused and he wants to be loved. And so because of that, he has this twisted idea of Christine and sees her as a victim that he can save. And that's not seeing a woman as what she actually is. It's like, I want to be the savior. I want to be someone who can like, you know, whatever, be her protector, but it's not actually seeing a woman fully.
Right. That's not actually loving someone. That's
exactly
loving what you feel
it's
like
the Daisy.
You can.
It's the
The Daisy like, Buchanan. Yep.
Yes.
From Great Gatsby.
It's like she's such a victim of her situation. It's like, yeah, but like, I mean, I've never read the book. I've seen the movie, but it's like, you're not supposed to really fully know who Daisy really actually is mm-hmm. on purpose. That's another good correlation. Right. When people say that The Great Gatsby is their favorite movie or book, I'm like, why? I want to know why. Because if you could tell me the reason that it's actually trying to do it, then I'll like, that's cool.
Which is interesting because I think the show is trying to hint at that here in this they season. They are. With
and
making,
that's the thing too. Yeah, right, that's my soapbox. Right. Because when I watch this episode, I'm like, you guys are not getting it. Like he's supposed to be deranged and he's supposed to be like wanting so bad. It's kind of like Riley. This is why there've been so many correlations, because they want to be the savior. They want to be this person that can curl up Buffy in their lap and like protect her because she's such a victim in these situations. But it's like, Buffy's capable and she's saying she doesn't want to be with you very plainly, and he's not listening. And he's like, I'm gonna kill my forever love to show you how much, like,
and he's like shocked when she's like, I don't care.
And she's like, you're disgusting. And everyone's like, oh, poor Spike. I'm like, oh, like, same thing with the Phantom. Like, guys, I understand. I had a crush on Joy Butler too. Like, I get it. But like, I have a crush on Joy Butler playing the Phantom. I don't have a crush on the Phantom. Like,
on the Phantom. Yeah. Nobody actually wants this.
Yes. Anyway, that's my soapbox about crush. And I'll probably have to say the same thing again for the people who don't listen to the spoilers, but it's just, it's such a, I think it's a really great episode, but it's like most people don't get why I think it's such a great episode, not for the reason other people think it's a great episode. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, not me trying to crap on Spike. I think Spike is a really great character. And I think that especially in Crush, I think Crush and Fool for Love are two sides of the same coin of if you want to know what he's like as character, both of those episodes need to be played in order for you to really get it. So,
Yeah, we'll have Naj with us too. So she's going to have a lot to say. That's just going to be a fun episode. It's going to be so fun to talk about. And then the spoiler section is going to be real lit, because we're going to get to talk about how Crush ties into all the rest of the season with all that other stuff. So yeah, it's going to be good. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Tumblr at Becoming Buffy Podcast. And you can email us at becomingbuffypodcast@gmail.com. Special shout out and thank you to our producers, Christine, CJ, Kate, Omri, Paul, and Cashan. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, and we will talk to you all next time.